brings me to my guest, Skip Jarrell, Sebastopol's Public Safety Outreach Coordinator. Do you have a shortened version of that? Let's see, SPSOC.
Right, yeah. And some people have said PSOC, but I really don't like that. I like PSOC. I think if we just say the letters one right after the other. Just my name is fine. I mean, I think that's the main thing. But that is an interesting, for me anyway, an interesting title, if you will. It was something that Chief Braga and I really sort of went around the corner a couple of different times on, trying to figure out what really speaks to what we're trying to do. And the public safety piece, I think, is a lot of times more police than fire, you know, but really thinking, no, we want people to understand that it's a little bit bigger picture, and especially because I'm more focused under the fire department. Hopefully there's some subtlety in that. But clearly I'm not a first responder. Mm-hmm. I really am simply an outreach coordinator, you know, trying to get my basic charges to improve the preparedness level of our community, the Sebastopol community and the surrounding area. So I'm pleased to be able to have that opportunity to do that. And the history on that is that I started in 2006 with the Sebastopol Fire Department and the CERT program, which is CERT, and it's a community emergency response team. We started on the anniversary of the 2006 quake in the park in Sebastopol. Oh, yeah. It was the first time we exposed anything that we were trying to do, and so we did that for a really long time. And then we started this Map Your Neighborhood program that we have going, and that's been going since about 2010. Early part of 2011 was really when it sort of picked up a little bit of steam. And then of course the fires have really done a lot to bring more attention to what people can do to take care of themselves, in their neighborhoods, in their neighborhood and in their community.
In the Sebastopol area, We got lucky in terms of, you know, the fires, et cetera, but we had a taste of it in terms of having to learn how to evacuate to live with no electricity and things. Now for you, how was that that crazy chaotic process?
Right. You know, actually for me, it wasn't, I was just personally impacted by it. I mean, I checked in with the chief to find out if there was anything that my position really needed to be doing. And he was just like, no, it's just time to get out.
Right.
You know, it's time to go. I mean, I did the same as everybody else, but I can say that I had thought through what I was going to do before that happened. So frankly, I left where I live off of Elphick and Witter Road back in that area, and went up to Pleasant Hill, and I was in Petaluma in roughly an hour. And I know some people that were on Petaluma Avenue in Sebastopol for a couple of hours.
Yes.
Trying to get out. Yeah. So the evacuation, there was a lot that went on, you know, that I think we can improve. And I think that's what we're trying to do in general.
Yeah. It could have been disastrous with that type of jam up for miles and miles, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was the paradise situation, right? I mean, people and some people in their cars and then some people in their cars were caught on the road because of that, just because of the traffic. And some people that literally ran out of gas sitting in those lines. We were lucky that the fires weren't on us at the time. And I do think that that was part of the concern for some of those people that were caught. I mean, again, Chief Braga said that people literally just pulled over, parked their cars and walked to the fire station in order to be able to find out, you know, look what might happen to me. And then for him to be able to say it, but yes, but it's not coming here, you know, go back to your car, get back in that line, you know, and figure it, you take the time and then get on out of here, you know. I think the big learning though, Arnold, is for people to know how do you get out of your own street.
Right.
And the main thoroughfares, I don't like to take the main thoroughfares anyway, personally, you know, I mean, I like those other side streets, even if I have to take a little bit longer to get somewhere, I'm not stuck in that same kind of traffic. And I think that's what people need to do is, once again, take responsibility for ourselves and learn what are the evacuation ways, what are the evacuation routes that we would take to get out of my neighborhood. And if your neighborhood is next to mine, I'm going to need to know how to get out of yours. So what are you thinking? Exactly. You know, that's what I want, you know, I also want to know that, you know, so that we can talk about then, okay, well, how are we going to get out of either neighborhood if that's the case? So, you know.
Yeah, because there's so many different levels. There's an individual living in your own home. Then yes. there's obviously your street, your neighborhood.
Yes.
There's these circles, aren't there?
Yes, these layers of it. Absolutely. And I think that's, in some ways, I think what happened when somebody on high made the decision, you know, that we need to evacuate the West County. You know, there was a lot of, in hindsight, there's probably a lot of ways that we could have thought to do it differently. But with the information that was made at the time, with the information on hand at the time,
right.
and the resources that they knew that they were trying to deal with to actually fight the fire, and what would be, in my opinion anyway, what would be drawn away to deal with us as people out here worrying about the skies falling, you know, that kind of situation. I think they made the right decision. I think what people need to know going forward is something that, a message that came out of one of the meetings that we had afterwards, and that is that the warnings are an opportunity mm-hmm. to not have that same problem, waiting to evacuate at the last minute. You know, we had lots of people that came to our leader council meeting that said, oh yeah, well, when the warnings first came out, we went to see friends in San Francisco, or, you know, we went somewhere else, or we just essentially left because we thought it was the best thing to do. And oh, by the way, we weren't in that traffic.
Right.
There was no traffic when we left.
Right.
You know, so anyway, so
the anticipation.
I think, yeah, exactly. The warning process is something that I think now we know we need to pay attention to that.
Right.
At least I know that. I have that message clearly in mind as I need to pay attention to it earlier. I wasn't overly impacted myself, although I saw a lot of it. And then I went to the shelter, one of the shelters in Petaluma.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be able to see, you know, might I do something? Or, you know, although they had everything well in hand. Mm-hmm. And also just to see, okay, what was the experience that was going on there? And it was a thriving place with lots of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. People and their animals, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some pet with their pets, you know. Just so much that was going on that, as I understand how shelters should be working, was really happening for those people that were being pushed in that direction, which all of us were.
Right.
You know, I mean, ultimately, we're all pushed in that direction. So, I mean, it was really great to see that it was happening as it needed to happen. Although I was really glad to go on to San Francisco.
Right.
You know, because as great as the shelters are, if that's what you actually need, if you don't need that, I think this is what the whole preparedness message really is, well, where will you go? And I hear that in the neighborhoods now that people are talking about, okay, well, I know where I'm going. Oh, Arnold, by the way, what's your plan? Exactly. And, you know, do you want to give me the number of the person that you're going to go and see so that I can check in on you, or they can call, you know, what kind of information do we need to share? I think we used to live like that. And
yeah,
you know,
it used to be neighborhoods, yeah.
Right, exactly. And it wasn't a big deal to know that you were leaving and you were going to LA and you would be at so-and-so's house. You know,
right.
That was not uncommon for us to share that kind of information. And right. It would be nice if we could get back to that sort of thing, you know, and feel comfortable with, in some way, in being able to do that. Although I know that we're individuals, and we push that individual button a lot.
Yeah, and we also tend to leave aside all the bad stuff.
Yes.
You know, we live in an amazing area, incredible scenery, and such beauty, and it's easy to forget the horrors that can occur within moments.
Yes, yes.
Here, that's the thing, isn't it?
Right.
It's bringing that, you know, we don't have to live under a freaked out condition all the time, but the knowledge has to be imbued in us.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. I mean, imbued just bit by bit so that it becomes normal for us to think in those ways rather than it being the sky is falling thing. Because once we start saying the sky is falling, we respond in a very specific way. You know, so like I'm waving my hands over my head, I'm having a difficult time, or we could sort of prepare for that.
Right.
And then it doesn't have to be quite so chaotic. I mean, that's my goal in trying to do these programs, is to help people to foreshorten that length of time that it might be chaotic,
right.
Get into the right action, do the right things for yourself in the next little while, and it won't be nearly as difficult or bad, you know.
Now, you know, we've talked about evacuations, but I know a lot of your program is really about people staying in place and what they do in case of an emergency where they don't have any outside help for a fair bit of time. And that's obviously a basic thing is that planning. What individually we need for that situation.
Right. Yeah, it really is. I mean, that's been the leading edge of all of this, you know, for me. You know, if we have to go, then we have to go. You know, then that's, you know, okay. But what if we do have the opportunity to stay? Something has happened, but we have that opportunity to stay as a, what I would consider to be an individual anyway. I mean, it's comfortable within myself, capable, feeling like I'm capable. I realize I can't do it all when the time comes, when the, you know, there's a lot going on around me. I mean, I'm going to need to be able to work with others, you know. Right. So, and I think that's a big part of what the program really is about is if you and I are in the same neighborhood and you and I are both going to be staying, you think we ought to talk?
Right.
You know, should we know some things, you know, about each other, you know, in order to be able to make that work? You know, so that is a part of what the programs are about, is to get people to have those conversations, you know, to try to be comfortable with sharing basic information. Like, I have meds that need to be refrigerated. You should probably know that about me. I mean, you have solar panels on your house, and if I just go over there and throw the breaker on your electric box, your house will fry. That kind of, I should probably know that. You know? So there's some basic, pretty easy when we get to these high level things, pretty easy to say, okay, that's the kind of information we should share. And then we start to get down into some of that other information that's, you know, a little bit more personal, but yet could also make all the difference in the world when something happens and I'm not home, but you know where that one precious thing is that I have that's hidden in the back room. You know where that is, you know, so you can get it before you go or whatever's happening to my house, you know, and vice versa.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that we're talking about. So who's staying? Are we all staying? What conditions are we in? You know, what sort of skills, what sort of experience do we have? What sort of resources, equipment do we have? All of that's a part of these conversations. And that's actually pretty fun when you get into some of those conversations.
Yeah. And now these conversations, now you do basically regular meetings in communities.
Right.
Around the city.
Yes. Yeah. So I have a regular Map Your Neighborhood class in Sebastopol, and I do have it in different facilities around town. I also do a regular monthly class in Grayton. Typically at the Grayton Fire Department. Been doing that for almost a year now. And we also have a monthly, what we call a leader council meeting. So if somebody comes to our Map Your Neighborhood class, essentially I consider them to be, if you came to the class, I would consider you to be a leader that was going back into your neighborhood to implement the program in your neighborhood. And then we would be able to stay connected, you with me as a leader, and then the other leaders that come to the leader council, and then we all sort of talk and share ideas about what worked and, you know, things like, oh, Skip, that idea you had, it's BS. That does not work. You know, or hey, Skip, yeah, you had a good one. It actually does work. We share that kind of information so that we have a learning, so that there's a learning process going on. So that's a really big part of what we do. But so I have the class in Sebastopol. I have a class in Grayton. There's one coming up on the 24th at the Senior Center in Sebastopol. It's from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Senior Center. And then on the 25th, it's at the Grayton Fire Department, again, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. So those are the classes. It's the basic Map Your Neighborhood class. It's 90 minutes, 6:30 to 8. Once that class is over, you would have some basic information, a basic understanding of the program. Again, enough, I think, to feel comfortable to go out into your neighborhood and maybe knock on some doors. Find that other fellow that's got some interest, or that other lady that's got some interest in your neighborhood to address these kinds of issues, and maybe do it as a team, you know, that kind of thing, and then coordinate a meeting. that you would then get your neighbors together and then go through the Map Your Neighborhood program, as we discuss in the class, right. You would then go through that program. That's the goal, is to get you to implement the program in your neighborhood and then come back to our leader council and again talk to us about how did that work in your neighborhood. What did you choose as your boundaries in your neighborhood? You know, some neighborhoods are 8 houses only. Some neighborhoods are 26 houses. Right. You know, anywhere in between, you know, how did you define that? And then we're putting all of that on a big map. So we start to get an idea of where are the active neighborhoods? What do they look like? What shapes are they? And are they next to each other? And might those two two neighborhoods connect? Or are there areas in town where we don't have any Map Your Neighborhood people? And might we try to find a way to address that area in order to get everybody on a basically the same page, basically the same information? So I could walk into your neighborhood if you were across town and essentially sort of know the same information, so I could begin talking with you right away, understanding, well, have you done this, and have you done that, and have you done the next thing? Yes, 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 no. Okay, I can go and do that no for you because I understand what that is.
I get you.
I understand that step. That's part of the goal also, is for there to be somewhat common knowledge for all of us to work with. And it's a very simple knowledge. It's not super complex knowledge. Right. Turn my gas off, turn my electric off, turn my water off. How do I do that? You know, where's your fire extinguisher? You know, that kind of information. Very, very basic information. But really important as far as getting oneself grounded right away in the process.
I'm here with Skip Jarrells, the Sebastopol's Public Safety Outreach Coordinator. And he's trying to save us from ourselves, basically.
Yeah, it's probably pretty close. We do have a way of being able to sort of put ourselves in more jeopardy than a lot of times is really around us. So, Yeah, part of the preparedness thing. That's really what it is. Just
exactly. Now, some things must be very difficult, like certainly in Sebastopol, like having 100-foot defensible area is like impossible, basically, isn't it? That, you know, when you have small gardens and big trees and lots of houses, there's some things are very hard to control.
Yeah. Obviously, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the more rural properties, maybe they can do that, right? I mean, and even some of them, they weren't built originally with that in mind. So a lot of the greenery around the homes are really beautiful, but we'll torch the house that much sooner, you know, so that defensible space turns out to be really important. But I think it's also important even for regular houses in town just to be able to recognize, you know, or to better understand what might be a problem fire-wise. You know, I mean, I think we learned something from, at least I learned something from the 2017 fires about the small embers coming and landing in your gutters, for one, and they don't ignite right away. They might ignite hours or days later.
Just smolder.
They just smolder there. And what are the gutters right next to? And that is your shingles, which are either petroleum, you know, or wood.
Or wood.
Most homes would be petroleum wood. So what do we do with those kinds of things? And the screening that goes on the air vents that are down below the house, you know, so that we have plenty of air. Typically those are built to, one, let air circulate, and to keep rodents out, having nothing to do with embers.
Actually, embers, right.
You know, so a finer mesh screening is what was really promoted immediately after the fires, was the little holes that you have up underneath your eaves.
Right.
Those two have large screens to keep birds out. And again, so replacing those or covering those with a finer mesh screen, you know, those are the kinds of things, at least for me, those are the kinds of things like, okay, I can do that. You know, those are the kinds of things that I can do to affect some sort of change.
Right.
The other thing that I always thought was really interesting was ladder fuel, which I thought was, you know, my ladder, which is aluminum. And I'm thinking, like, that's not really fuel at all, as far as I'm concerned. Well, it's actually the low shrub, the medium shrub, and then the tall shrub right next to your house. So it goes from the low to the middle to the high. That's the ladder fuel all the way up into your house. That makes total sense. You know, it makes total sense. And then how far away from the house does it make sense to have whatever level of fuel that you might feel comfortable with for yourself? What is the distance from the house? And I think people can find out a lot of that information. There's, I mean, the internet obviously is just this huge pool of information. No one opinion is the one that's for everybody, right, you know, knows right. One size fits all thing doesn't work in that way. But I think people can just learn more and more just by getting into the conversation. And that's again where this whole neighborhood idea really comes into play, because you and I can knock the ideas around. We right. might have a difference of opinion, but I could really like your opinion. You know, it might be the way for me to go, you know, and I finally recognize that because we're having the conversation, you know. Right. Otherwise, I'm putting that really big screen up again. Right. And you're doing that little screen, and I don't understand that fine mesh, and I don't understand why.
We didn't find any rats in our ashes.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So those, you know, I mean, again, it sort of circles back to having the conversations, like this conversation, you know, I mean, for us to be able to do it. I mean, yeah, what did we learn from that whole situation? I mean, you know, there's so many things I think that we learned as individuals, you know, from that kind of situation. Some people stayed and fought, you know, to save their homes, and it worked.
Right.
A small percentage, let's say, of people that actually tried that. And for some people, it didn't work. Some people completely abandoned everything but saved their lives. And, you know, how important is that? You know, yeah, just a huge array of possibilities that could have gone on, and a huge array of things that actually, the realities that actually did happen, you know.
Well, that's it, the variables. I mean, you know, the flames in 17 were on the way to Sevastopol, basically. Yes. I mean, it was just lucky the wind veered and died of it. Otherwise, within really an hour or two, we would have been,
In trouble.
Deep trouble.
Yeah. I mean, when they, in the Kincaid, when they stopped it at Windsor, that's not what happened in 2017.
Right.
I mean, it jumped 101, right, and Coffee Park was in the way.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and it was on its way, as you're saying. I mean, it was on its way. And in the Kincaid, luckily, that's not what happened. And part of that was that decision that was made that we will apply all of our resources to the fire, and you all need to get out.
Right.
So we're not worrying about you.
Yeah, because in 17, they weren't fighting the fire. They were getting people out of there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It was all just a big, I mean, it was well past any ability to be able to control the fire. I mean, and that happens, obviously. I mean, right. and it happens in that area. You know, that is the repeat is in that particular area, simply because Mother Nature, the way Mother Nature works. But we keep building there.
You know, I mean,
that's the thing that sort of gets me, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate how it has had to happen for homeowners, but when I first went through Coffee Park after the rebuild had started and I realized, well, they're still only 3 feet apart.
Right.
You know, I mean, I understand that maybe financially that makes sense because I'm rebuilding, but wasn't the gap a problem? You know, I mean, because it would just jump from house to house to house. You know, so anyway, so there.
Yeah.
And I was not there, so I'm not the one making the decision to come back in and how I'm going to do that. And I understand
there are zoning regulations and all those sort of things come into play, don't they?
Well, yes. And people needing to get back to their lives, you know, and obviously their lives were just totally disrupted. You know, I sort of understand all of that. And yet some of it still is like, wait a minute, I think there might be a better way, but I'm not the one, you know, impacted, nor the one making those decisions. Right. So it's easy from the outside, I think, to be able to say.
How is the Sonoma County emergency preparation? It seems like there's been a lot of comings and goings of people. It seems like they haven't had a very, very strong focus. They haven't all the time on since the fires.
Yeah,
it's been up and down a lot, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the outside, and I certainly feel like an outsider to that whole process myself also, but it does seem like that from the outside. But when I do go to some of the county meetings, which I feel really privileged to be able to get into some of the county meetings that I've been to, there is a lot going on, but it's a big, big job. I mean, it's a really big job to do some of the things that the revamped, you know, Department of Emergency Management for the county. It's a big job to do what this fellow Chris Godley is doing with the county. I mean, I think he went from a staff of 4 to a staff of like 16 or 18 now, you know, and I've had the opportunity to interface with a few of those people. I mean, they've come with a lot of experience, you know, to be able to step into a position that we did not have before,
right,
you know, and then try to get going, you know, in that sort of a situation. And I think all of that does take time. And from the outside, it doesn't look like they're actually accomplishing a lot, you know, and they probably feel like that themselves in some cases. And yet at the same time, we have like 16 or 18 people doing this stuff now instead of 4 or 5.
Huh.
I think that's good.
It should be. Given the right policies to follow.
Yeah, should being the operative word. Yeah, yeah. But I do know that there's like a community preparedness manager now, Nancy Brown. She's been on with Richard and I. She's really great and a huge job to try to cover the county, but she's really in there, you know, biting and scratching the whole time doing stuff. And I'm assuming that the other people that I've met somebody associated to sheltering. She too was just like right on the money with years of experience of dealing with sheltering that we did not have in the county previously.
Right.
Nobody focused on that, you know, and now we have people focused on exactly that. So that whole process can happen in a hopefully better, certainly in a different way, but in a better way. So it really did. I mean, I don't see how they do it, frankly. I mean, I'm really glad I'm not at any level of government because I don't know how government actually does what it does, because it doesn't seem like it's doing a good job, you know, from the outside. But nonetheless, it's a big boat.
Yeah, the wheels grind. Yeah.
Yeah. They do sort of just grind along, you know, and I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, I'll do my thing. That whole thing was to think globally and act locally.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the best thing that any of us can really do.
It's all down to the individuals acting in those moments. And you give them that opportunity to act and keep their family and friends and neighborhood safe. That's the thing.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, I recall that you were in England. I don't know how different it was there, but I mean, I do know here. I mean, we were sold the fact that they would come and take care of us.
Mm.
They would rescue us.
Right.
You know, when something happened, you know, we will, don't worry. We're going to be there.
Help is on the way.
Exactly. You know, well, I'm sorry. You know, that's just not the reality. For Sebastopol, I think Chief Braga might have somewhere in the low 30s of volunteers. Mm. It's an all-volunteer fire department.
Right.
So he's the one paid fellow, and I think they have now a new position that has been allocated by the city. First time ever that there would be two paid firefighters in Sebastopol.
Goodness.
Unbelievable, really. 30-some people. I mean, we were like, what, 7,800, something like that in Sebastopol, not counting the surrounding area, which they do assume that they serve the county, that rest, or not the rest of the county, but a county area of roughly 40,000, 30 people, plus the other fire departments, most of which are paid. You know, I'm sorry, they're not coming to my place. You know, I mean, unless my place is on fire, they're not coming to my house, you know. Right. So I need to take care of myself. And if they're not coming to our neighborhood, yours and mine's neighborhood, wouldn't it be good if we just knew more about each other and we knew more about some things to do to take care of ourselves? Including the water that we would need, the food that we would need, the person down the street that happens to have access and functional needs in some way. You know, I just heard a great story at a neighborhood meeting over this past weekend, that a fellow that the paraplegic, had a car, a van set up for him to be able to evacuate, but there was nobody there to drive him. And none of his neighbors knew that during the evacuations because they had never talked to each other about what his needs were and what resources they had. And I can tell you, I was so impressed by what happened with the 8 or 9 people that were there. They were just immediately, we have to do something about this. And that's exactly how we are. Right. I mean, truly, that's how we are.
Yeah.
Tell me what the problem is and I'll try to do my best to solve it, or at least participate in solving it. You know, we will do those things. And I think we just need to get into those conversations to be able to do that kind of stuff.
But as you say, people do have to know the reality that people won't be coming to help in a major emergency, and right. that you have to have some things, otherwise you're going to be in really bad
trouble. Yes.
You know, I mean, that's the thing to stress, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when I first started this in 2006, they said you needed to be prepared for 3 days. Mm. You know, now it's a couple of weeks. Well, some people say longer. Mm. You know, depends upon if your children in place, or are you anticipating leaving? And, right. and frankly, as soon as you just start to even address those questions to yourself, I mean, sincerely address them. Okay, stop for a moment. I'm going to shelter in place. What does that mean to me? Mm. Certain things start to pop out. Well, do I have water? Is my water running? You know, do I have electricity? Do I have gas still?
A toilet, yeah.
Yes, exactly. What am I going to do about a toilet? You know, those kinds of things, you know, they shouldn't be big, huge issues for us, but they will be if we don't think about them ahead of time.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting process for us to get into those conversations and to be able to address those kinds of things. But once we do, they're not huge.
Right.
You know,
right.
we can come up with solutions for them. I mean, another one that I heard that I thought was really interesting was out in the rural areas, and people were talking about their horses and their cattle. Mm. And then the one couple that really didn't have a whole lot to say finally said, well, we have llamas. And we don't know anything about your horses or your cows. And the other people are like, we know nothing about your llamas. Matter of fact, we've been thinking about your llamas, and we're not really sure we even like them, you know, and vice versa. But they had that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing is they end up having that conversation about that.
Right. We had a question. Thank you very much. The concern is about food in your fridge and freezer when an emergency happens and the lights power goes out.
Right.
That's you know, hundreds of dollars, and obviously a big factor for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it certainly seemed like that to me from the people that I heard from. You know, I mean, obviously some people are more upset about it than others. You know, but I think the real question has to come down to, what is the anticipation about that food? You know, are you thinking that without power, it will be okay? You know, well, without power, ultimately, it won't be okay. You know, I mean, we all need to be able to take responsibility for ourselves and sort of understand, if I'm really worried about that salmon that I caught in Alaska that I have freezing in my freezer, I should probably have a generator to take care of that to make sure that it stays frozen. You know, I mean, if that's what I'm after. But sort of like what we were talking about, Arnold, I mean, after the evacuation, I came back, I had absolutely no idea how long the power had been off in my place, but the power was back on when I came back, and my refrigerator was on, and I had lots of stuff in the refrigerator and a little bit in the freezer. I'm not a big freezer guy, but I really had no idea, you know, except that I had to just look at some things and say, I'm pretty sure this needs to be thrown away, you know, and this other thing, I'll do a little taste, you know, and see. But otherwise, I mean, I threw almost everything out.
Wow.
Except stuff that I just knew, okay, it doesn't really matter whether this gets cold and then hot and then cold and then hot again. It doesn't really matter. Those are the kinds of things that we all just have to look at and essentially make our own decisions. There's no one answer for something like that.
Right.
You know, for most of these things, there's no one size fits all. You know, I do have friends that do fish in Alaska, and they've spent a lot of money to get that salmon, you know, and so for them it's really important, and they do take steps to take care of it in case something were to happen like that, power going out, and especially power going out when they're not home. And I think that sort of comes back to like the neighborhood situation. You know, lots of neighborhoods that I've talked with, only, let's say, a neighborhood that has 10 or 12 people that have come to a meeting, one or two hands will go up when you ask who has a generator mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. So the very first thing that I tell the rest of the people is write down their name so that you know that's a guy that has a generator, you know.
Right.
And then you need to start to ask some second and third level questions. Does it actually work?
Right.
That's a big one, you know.
They're gassing it, yeah.
Yeah, do you have the fuel for it? You know, those kinds of questions, a lot of times they get no's because right. no, that's right. You know, I haven't actually run it in a year or so, or blah, 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 whatever that might happen to be. But I think it's important for people to be able to understand, you know, that, you know, like what is going on in the neighborhood and how might we work together. To go back to that example about the meds, that was truly an example that came up in a meeting where in a neighborhood, first time of people getting together, somebody commented about they had had a small generator, had given it away, had a small generator, bought a bigger one that took a tractor to be able to move it.
Oh my goodness.
You know, but she had a spare refrigerator in the basement. And then the neighbor from across the living room finally was able to say, I need to have my meds refrigerated. Would I be able to bring my meds over to your second refrigerator? And the woman was like, absolutely, we could do that. And one of the other neighbors says, I actually happen to have that tractor. And if need be, we could move your generator to from one house to one house to keep things going.
Oh, wow.
So again, what happened was just because the conversation started, problems were presented and solutions were at least talked about. Right. Now, whether or not they do any of those things, I don't really know. But the magic in the moment was we did what we do as humans when we bother to work together. Right. You know, as we come up with those kinds of solutions, you know, and very heartfelt. I mean, you can feel it, you know, that people go, hey, I've got a solution to your problem. And you can see it on the person that had the problem. You can see the relaxation. You can see that sense of thank you, you know, from internally, you know. You can see that on people, you know. I mean, it's a really great thing.
Well, in those type of situations, obviously that makes people go in many different ways in emergency situations.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And you can never predict that.
Right, right. Yeah, chaos. I mean, we all sort of move into chaos, and then chaos has, you know, certain things that happen in it.
Right.
You know, I mean, for all of us, you know, I mean, some to lesser degrees and some shorter time periods, some longer time periods and greater degrees, but nonetheless, we all basically react the same.
Right.
What we want to do is respond to that chaos. And that is where, again, a program like Map Your Neighborhood, the goal here is that you know you have this one piece of paper that you could go to. And even if just for a moment you were to look at this and remember, oh yeah, that's right. I'm supposed to now check my gas. I'm supposed to now check my electricity. I'm supposed to make sure my water is turned off if that's what I need to do. And now I'm supposed to go over to the meeting place to see how everybody else is doing. We're all going to come together at a meeting place. I know the first four or five things I need to do, that calms us a lot of times. That calms us right down out of that chaos, and now we're into action and we're responding to things instead of reacting. Again, that's part of the goal of all of this, is to just give us something to respond to like that, because frankly that's what first responders have.
Yeah.
First responders have a series of protocol things that they do, action steps that they take. When A happens, I do B, C, D, and E. You know, and it's just by rote after a while.
Right.
And so they don't go through the same level of chaos and questioning that we do, because they know the first few things to do.
Right.
And then from then on, it's situational.
Right.
You know, we could be, we could do these first two or three things and know we've got our water and gas and everything else shut off. We go to the meeting place and we find out two or three of our neighbors haven't shown up.
Mm-hmm.
We have a situation now that we need to deal with. But in this program, we talk about it ahead of time.
Right.
You know, what do we do in that situation? We get a team of people and we send two people over to that house. We get another team of people and we send two people over to that house. And we have a process. So now we're not even in chaos because we've now come and now we don't know where people are. We know the steps to be able to do something.